Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. About 6 years ago, Beth Terry was catching up on her reading when she read an article about the waste field of plastic in the Northern Pacific Gyre. This is the part of the Pacific Ocean near the circulatory currents where debris and our trash collects. Today, it's estimated that trash area is larger than the state of Texas, and it's filled with plastic. So Terry, being an accountant by trade, made an accounting of her own plastic waste in her household, and after seeing the results, made a vow to reduce her plastic footprint, so to speak. Today, her household produces less than 2% of the national average of waste, and she writes about her experiences on her blog, My Plastic Free Life, and in her recent book, Plastic Free, How I Kicked the Plastic Habit and How You Can Too. By the way, the book was printed and produced without the usual plastic coating for the cover, polyester or nylon thread in the binding, or plastic glue. Beth Terry is the keynote speaker tonight in a free lecture as a part of the University of Tulsa's 16th Annual Student Research Colloquium, going on all week at TU. There'll be a workshop on alternative use of plastics at 5:30, and then she'll be speaking tonight at 7 at the Alan Chapman Activity Center. Again, the lecture is free to the public, and Beth Terry joins me today on Studio Tulsa. Beth Terry, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
In your book, Plastic Free, How I Kicked the Plastic Habit and How You Can Too, you recount that about a little over 5 years ago, you were just like the rest of us, creating this enormous plastic footprint, if you will, from everything from the things you buy at the store, the things you buy at a restaurant, to all of your household items, just virtually everything in your house. And at some point, you made a decision to go plastic free. First of all, that's not an easy choice to make. What was the determinant factors in your mind?
Well, it all just really happened one day after reading an article online about the plastic pollution problem in the ocean. This was back in 2007, and at that time, I didn't know anything about plastic pollution or that the fact that our oceans were filling up with plastic. And I saw a photo of a dead albatross chick, which is a bird that lives on Midway Island, which is thousands of miles from civilization, halfway between the United States and Japan. And these chicks are mistaking plastic for food and eating the plastic, and their bodies are just filling up with plastic and they're dying. And this island is just strewn with similar carcasses. And it just, you know, it broke my heart. I kept reading the article. I discovered not only are birds eating plastic, but humans are actually ingesting the chemicals in plastics too. And the human moms are feeding their babies these chemicals. And it spoke to me in a way that no other environmental sort of information or article ever had before, I think, because I could look at those objects inside that bird, and they were things that I was using on a daily basis. And so I just decided, I wonder what it would be like to try to live without acquiring any new plastic. It was just an idea that came into my head, and I thought I would just try it out for a few days and see what would happen. And a few days has turned into almost 6 years.
Well, it's interesting how you went about it. You said, first of all, let me inventory. You're an accountant by background, and I think you decided to say, well, okay, let's do an accounting. How much plastic am I using? How much plastic were you using that first week when you started thinking about these issues?
20 ounces, almost about a pound and a quarter, just in the first week. And at this point, my entire plastic footprint is about 2 pounds a year.
Wow.
So
from a pound a week to 2 pounds a year.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
And actually, that pound a week is small compared to the U.S. average. And the reason for that is because that was after I decided to try not to acquire any more. And I was just using up the stuff that I already had in the house. You know, if I was still living the way I had been, it probably would have been even more than a pound a week.
What's the average? Has anybody done any research on that, about the average amount of plastics we use and discard a week?
Well, a year, I can tell you, the average American generates about between 88 to 120 pounds a year. Mm-hmm. That was based on some figures I calculated a couple of years ago. So it's probably gone up since then.
Now, you were talking about the big trash heap in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. One thing I learned from this book is that the place where this trash builds up is around the circulation of the oceans. The oceans, if you think of them as a giant circle going from coast to coast, you know, the big Japanese current and the like in the Pacific, in the middle, that's where this trash accumulates. Well, we have those in every ocean. There's one in the Atlantic, the North, the South Atlantic, the Indian Ocean. And I guess there are trash piles in all of the oceans now.
There are. There are. Research vessels are going out all the time to study this problem, and they are finding plastic in every ocean, in every gyre, and there are smaller gyres as well. There are five main ones that we know about, and there are also smaller ones.
Yeah, and the gyre is basically the water in the middle of where the circulation of the ocean takes place. Yeah,
right.
Sort of the stagnant area.
Yeah, well, it's spinning. The current is going around and around in a circle, and so that's what the gyre refers to.
Yeah.
And yes, the plastic does get stuck in the middle, just as you said.
Reducing your plastic footprint, if you will, sounds like a really difficult thing. And just to give you a sense of the difficulty, in publishing your book is mostly plastic-free, as plastic-free as you can publish a book. This was difficult to do that.
It was. And, you know, Rich, I didn't even realize when I set out to write a book that books had so much plastic in them. But I was just fortunate to find a publisher, and my publisher is Skyhorse Publishing, that said right off the bat when they decided to publish my book, we're going to try to do it without any plastic. And they explained to me that hardback books normally have plastic coatings on the cover and plastic glue on the binding and synthetic threads holding it together. And so they figured out a way to make it without any plastic. And as far as I know, there isn't any plastic in the book. But the publisher was just covering himself. He was a little hesitant to say completely plastic-free just in case there was something he wasn't aware of.
Well, what were the first steps you took when you basically said, okay, I'm off plastic? What were the first steps?
Well, my very first step was just to always bring my reusable bag to the grocery store with me and then to any store with me. I have a funny story in my book about how one time when my husband and I were shopping, we were on vacation in out of town, and we were in a grocery store, and there weren't any, they only had plastic bags, and we had forgotten to bring our reusable bags with us. And we searched the entire store to try to find some different kinds of paper bag to use just in that situation and couldn't find anything. And so we ended up putting our produce in our shirts and just carrying it out in our T-shirts in front of us back to our hotel.
Well, and you know, reusable bags now are becoming more and more you know, in Europe, they've been used for years, but you're expected to bring your own bag and sack your own groceries. But here in America, we don't tend to do that. But at least they're becoming more and more prominent now. But I guess when you started doing this in 2007, it was kind of like you were being a nonconformist.
Yeah. Yeah, there was one person that I was really inspired by, and it was a man named Colin Bevan who lived in New York City, and he called himself the No Impact Man, and he and his family were trying to live for a year without creating any environmental impact, and they were, you know, reducing their trash and their plastic consumption. And I heard him on the radio, and I got really inspired by him. But as far as I know, this was a very unusual thing to do back then. And now there's a whole growing movement of other people that are trying to reduce their plastic because they're aware of this. And so that's really why I wanted to write a book, to make it easier for people, because the hardest part was doing all the research to figure out things like, how am I going to wash my hair without a plastic shampoo bottle? How am I going to eat snacks without plastic wrappers? You know, all these kinds of things.
Because really at this point, either you use a plastic shampoo bottle with the shampoo in there, or you basically create your own because there's no alternatives, right?
Well, there are actually great alternatives for shampoo at this point. There are things called shampoo bars, which is like a bar of soap, but it's actually shampoo. And there are quite a few companies and small companies that make these. Now, sometimes this might not be the kind of thing that you could find in the drugstore, but you can order online. And I have lots of resources for things like that on my website and in my book.
Well, maybe shampoo is not the best example, but say clothes detergent. Don't you make that yourself?
You can, but there are also there is a brand of clothes detergent called Ecover, which comes in a cardboard box and does not have one of those little plastic scoops inside.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a product called Soap Nuts, which is just little berries that come from a tree, and they have a natural soap on them, and you can use them in your wash instead. And then there are, of course, homemade recipes for it as well.
Well, where do you find the hardest place to avoid getting plastic in your life? Where are the hardest areas?
Well, for me right now, the hardest thing is prescription bottles.
That's right. They probably won't issue them without putting them in a bottle, will they?
They will not, and which is, you know, it's one thing, but I wish that you could take the same bottle back and have it refilled each time. And I don't know about other states, but in California where I live, they have to give you a brand new plastic bottle every time. And so, of course, in most places, those bottles are recyclable, but recycling is not really a solution to the plastic pollution problem. Because there's, you know, plastic recycling doesn't close the loop. It's more like downcycling. And a lot of our plastic recycling, actually, it gets shipped overseas. So it's important to recycle. I'm not saying that it's not. But it's even more important to try to reduce the amount that we have to recycle in the first place.
And your book talks about how plastic recycling doesn't close the loop. And you mentioned sort of downsizes. That means a plastic container becomes plastic fill. I mean, it just basically becomes smaller and smaller products. It really doesn't change a whole lot. It might be shredded and reformed, but it doesn't ever recycle in a true sense.
Not so much. I mean, there are some people working on trying to get plastic bottles to be able to be recycled into new plastic bottles, but they still have to add new virgin plastic to it. They can't just do it 100% recycled. So usually plastic bottle, for example, would get recycled into something like carpet or polar fleece or something like that that isn't further recycled. When we take plastic bags back to the grocery store to be recycled, usually they get recycled into plastic lumber, and then that product can't be further recycled, so it ends up in the landfill after all anyway.
You were talking about prescription bottles. I know in certain states and certain manufacturers, a lot of times it is the absolute worst type of plastic to recycle. It's the number that is least likely to be recycled. It has more chemical, it has more problems with it than any other type, and most places won't take pill bottles in recycling.
That's interesting. The plastic that's the hardest to recycle and has the most chemicals in it is PVC, which is otherwise known as vinyl, and has the number 3 on the bottom. Prescription bottles that I've seen out here are generally number 2 or number 5. Number 5 would be those clear amber-colored bottles.
Yeah.
And those are not recyclable everywhere. Out in California, number 5s get recycled more often, I think, than maybe in other places. Number 1s and number 2s are actually the most likely to be recycled everywhere. So I'm not sure about the toxic chemicals, unless in Oklahoma you're getting prescription bottles that are...
I think you're right. They're 5s. I think that's probably what they are.
Yeah, and number 5s are generally considered to be one of the safer plastics, although, as I mentioned in my book, no plastics can be considered to be 100% safe because manufacturers aren't required to disclose all the additives that they put in the plastics, and there are thousands of possible additives in any particular plastic product, and so many of those chemicals are endocrine disruptors, and if they won't tell us what's in it, then we can't know for sure if it's safe. But number 1, 2, and 5 are generally the ones that are considered to be less dangerous than the other types of plastics.
My guest today is Beth Terry. She writes the blog My Plastic Free Life, and she's the author of the book Plastic Free: How I Kicked the Plastic Habit and How You Can Too. She'll be speaking tonight at 7 o'clock at the Alan Chapman Activity Center on the University of Tulsa campus as a part of the annual TU Student Research Colloquium. And at 5:30, there'll actually be a workshop with a group of artists and various other recyclers on alternative use of plastics. That's preceding the lecture at 7 this evening. And Beth Terry is my guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, as you began making, you said you had about a pound the first week. What were the first steps you took that really made a difference in reducing the amount of plastics your household was producing?
Well, in addition to bringing my own reusable bag with me to the grocery store, I decided that I wasn't going to drink bottled water anymore. I was drinking bottled water pretty regularly, and so I got a stainless steel reusable water bottle, and I made a commitment to carry that with me. Nowadays, I carry a travel mug with me wherever I go just because it's a little bit more versatile. And then one of the biggest steps that I took was to try to find stores that sell foods in bulk bins rather than packaged on the shelf. And these are stores where you can often bring your own container or bring your own bag and fill up with beans or rice or nuts or snacks or pasta or all sorts of things, just in your own container. And so that made a huge difference. And then, you know, one of the things that has made the biggest difference for me, I think, is just asking myself before I buy something, is this something that I really need or want in the first place? Or is there something I could get instead? And is this something that's going to really make me happy? And I've actually saved quite a bit of money doing this because I shop at secondhand stores so that I'm not buying new plastic. And I just really question the need to constantly upgrade my electronics. You know, as soon as something breaks, instead of automatically throwing it away and buying something new, I ask, is there some way I can fix this? And I've actually learned how to fix all sorts of things in my house.
Give us an example. What have you learned to fix?
Well, the first thing was my plastic blow dryer. When the motor burned out, these things aren't meant to be repaired anymore. They're meant to be thrown away. But luckily, my dad is an electronics technician, so he helped me open it up and figure out what was wrong with it, what little piece needed to be replaced, and that thing is still going strong. I have fixed a rice cooker. I have fixed a scale. I fixed my washing machine, which took 2 weeks because it was a process, and it involved me getting in the thing and jumping up and down to try to get the basin free because it was so gunked up after so many years. But you know what? Learning how to fix things is really empowering. It feels really good, you know, instead of just throwing things away.
You know, hearing you talk about the blow dryer, it reminds us, you know, just about a generation ago, there were these fix-it shops that did all sorts of small appliances. Those are virtually gone now. Mm-hmm. And as we continue to deal with the problem of waste, of issues like this, it seems like it just makes perfect sense that we have shops like that and that manufacturers are geared towards making their products more fixable, if you will.
Yeah, so it's two things. Manufacturers designing things to be repaired and then also having the people that know how to fix them. But you know what? There are quite a few people out there that still do know how to fix things. The problem is just finding them. And Craigslist, for me, has been a really great resource. I can put a note on there and say, hey, does anybody know how to fix this or fix that? That's how I got my rice cooker fixed. I found a guy that said I know what to do, and he came over and he tested the circuits and he told me what part I needed to do, and we were able to get that fixed. And there's also a website called ifixit.com, which has lots of manuals and people who have discussions about how to fix this or that or the other. And so the internet is just full of resources for people.
You know, I was struck when reading the introduction, you refer to this idea of going plastic-free as 4 R's, refuse, reduce, reuse, and recycle.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was reading that, I was thinking of my parents' generation, and if you had parents that grew up in the Great Depression, you know, when you clean out their house, you know, after they passed on, you'll find all these products that it comes out from that Great Depression ethos, where it's whether it's the plastic milk cartons that are filled in the garage because they're going to be used for everything from starting new plants to, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, that the sort of reuse ethos that, you know, can be a pain at times, but it's also, that's how that generation was raised, to not to discard something automatically, figure out if there's a way you can use it for something else.
Isn't that great? Yeah. There's a woman who was a friend of mine who, she just passed away a couple of years ago, but she was in her 80s, and she would cut milk cartons apart, cardboard milk cartons, and she would use them for everything. She would use them to store food in the freezer. She would make little trays out of them and serve sandwiches on them.
Yeah.
And this is also the lady that never bought a jar of store-bought mayonnaise in her life, and I have her mayonnaise recipe in my book. There's tons of recipes for things that you can easily make yourself instead of buying packaged from the grocery store.
Well, one of the things you talk about is repurposing versus recycling, and that whole idea that lady was demonstrating is an example of repurposing. And is that something mm-hmm. you do in your life, or you try to avoid plastic altogether?
I do try to repurpose the plastic that I already have and make it last as long as possible. And repurposing is great because it requires a lot less energy than recycling. You know, when you recycle something, first of all, it has to be shipped to the recycling center and sorted with machines and then shipped somewhere else where the actual recycling takes place, and then they grind it down and melt it down and make it into some other product and ship that back. And that all of that takes a lot of energy. When you repurpose something, you're not taking it apart. You're just using it in the form that it already is, either to use it again for its original intent or to make it into something else, but you're not going through all those other steps. So I think it's a great idea.
One of the things you do is you visited recycling centers, and you sort of mentioned some of the energy issues that go along with recycling. But the other thing is that a lot of these plastic products are not going to a local recycling center. They're traveling halfway across the country and many places halfway across the world. I'm thinking about plastic bags and things like that. This is not a local regional issue. This is a transnational issue of what we're doing with our, quote, recycling.
It's true. In the United States, there is a recycling infrastructure that's growing, especially in the Southeast where carpet manufacturers are located.
Mm-hmm.
We are developing more ways to recycle products within the United States, but still the majority of the plastic does get shipped to China and places like that. And unfortunately, the environmental regulations in places like China are not to the same standards as in the United States. And so a lot of these, the recycling is happening, is emitting emissions, toxic emissions into the air. You know, you can't go to China without wearing a mask on your face because the air is so smoggy, it's so difficult to breathe. So, and what, you know, those emissions in China don't stay there. They end up back over in the United States within a matter of days because, you know, it's just one planet. So we really have to figure out ways to deal with the plastic waste that we generate here. There's another company called Preserve, which makes toothbrushes and razors and different products, household products, out of recycled plastic, that number 5 plastic. And that company is in the United States, and they do all their recycling and all their manufacturing in the United States. So I feel like this is the kind of thing that we need to encourage.
Now, right now the big debate is over plastic bags. So you're starting to see communities ban plastic bags. And yet, where places where plastic bags are offered, oftentimes you will see recycling efforts. But what are the ways in which the plastic industry actually does anything with plastic bags? What are done with them for the most part?
For the most part, most of the plastic bags that we recycle get mixed with other materials like sawdust and made into plastic lumber. So that would be something used to build a deck or outdoor furniture or things like that. Those products can't be recycled because they're a mixture of lots of different things. So they will end up in the landfill eventually. There is a company that is collecting those plastic bags and incorporating recycled content into the new plastic bags that they make.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a more true recycling because you're recycling something into the same thing. However, when you think about it, they're still taking a single-use item and recycling it into another single-use item, which takes a lot of energy. And so if we just bring our own reusable bags with us, that's cutting out that whole system, that whole process of creating waste and then having to do something with it and then creating more waste and having to do something with it.
Now, earlier in the book, you were talking about the first time you brought reusable bags to a grocery store. This is at a time when that was not a common practice, and you got a few looks and you sort of slowed down the line a little bit. But, you know, you talked about some of the other issues, which I think is really interesting today, is like takeout food. It's always, nearly always comes in plastic, although you are starting to see some folks go back to cardboard for their containers. But you use reusable containers for takeout food. You ask the restaurants to put your food in your own containers?
Sometimes I do. Well, let's back up a little bit, though. Uh-huh. One of the easiest things people can do if they are going to a sit-down restaurant where they might have leftovers is to have a container with them to bring home leftovers. That's really easy, and it doesn't require asking anybody else to do anything. You know, you just whip out your little stainless steel or Tupperware or whatever it is that you bring. I bring metal containers because I think they're safer than plastic. But whatever reusable container you have, you can just fill it yourself. Then the next step is, yeah, asking a restaurant to put your takeout food in your container. And, you know, sometimes they'll do it. It's just a matter of asking. It's just a matter of getting in the habit. So, you know, there's a Chinese restaurant down the street that will put soup in our containers for us. There's a sandwich shop down the street that has no problem packing a sandwich in my container if I haven't made a sandwich that day. I guess the hardest part in the beginning for me was just getting up the nerve to ask and being afraid that people would say no.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, if people say no, they say no. It's not the end of the world.
And you make your purchasing decisions based on that, don't you?
I do. So I will decide which restaurants to go to based on whether or not they'll let me use my own containers or not.
When people are saying, wow, that, you know, you're going to all this effort, you still have your own little luxuries in your life, and one of them is a glass straw. You like to drink out of a straw, don't you?
I do. I realize that straws are not necessary for most people, and it's surprising how many restaurant servers will stick a straw in your drink automatically, and some people will just take it out and set it on the table because they didn't want it in the first place. So I carry a glass straw with me, first because I do like to drink out of a straw, but second because if I request no straw from the server and then I show them that I have my own straw with me, they're more likely to remember not to put a disposable straw in my drink. Otherwise, a lot of times they'll just do it anyway because it's so automatic. I'm not trying to encourage or suggest that everyone should reduce their plastic to the level that I have. It's pretty extreme, and I think that there are better ways for us to spend our time when it comes to plastic pollution than counting every bit of plastic that we generate and trying to reduce it to zero. But I decided that I was going to try to use myself as an example just to see what was possible and to give people alternatives and to let them know what the alternatives are. But there is a growing number of people who are trying to get plastic out of their life as much as they can and then go take some further steps, because this is a systemic problem. It's not something that we can solve by each of us trying to reduce only our own plastic. We need companies to start making more responsible products. We need to ban or tax things like plastic bags and plastic bottles, things that are single-use and disposable. And we need our government to pass legislation to make sure that companies are responsible for not only the life cycle of their products, but also the safety, to make sure that the chemicals that they're using in these products is safe. So there's a lot more that we can be doing, but I think it is really important for us to start with ourselves, and a lot of people are following along.
Well, we look forward to your visit to Tulsa. Beth Terry, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks so much. This has been a fun conversation, Rich.
Beth Terry is the author of Plastic Free, How I Kicked the Plastic Habit and How You Can Too, as well as the blog, My Plastic Free Life. She'll be the keynote speaker at the University of Tulsa's 16th Annual Student Research Colloquium, going on all week at TU. She'll be speaking tonight at 7. The lecture will be preceded at 5:30 by a workshop on the alternative use of plastics and the way to recycle plastics as art pieces. That's this evening at 5:30 at the Allen Chapman Activity Center. Both events are free to the public. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent programs, they're available online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. Check out our website while you're there. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.